Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Pete Musto, Dorothy Gundy, and Anna Mateo. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Pete Musto.
You may be surprised to learn that the world's most trafficked endangered mammal is a strange-looking animal. It is the pangolin, also known as the scaly anteater. An adult pangolin can be almost 100 centimeters in length, although the smallest are only about 30 centimeters long. The animal's body is covered in small, thin scales that help to protect the animal from attack. Pangolins can fight off attackers with their sharp claws. Yet they possess little defense against human attackers.
Several years ago, demand for the meat and scales of pangolins was rising in China. It got so high that all 8 kinds of pangolin were declared vulnerable or critically endangered. The International Union for Conservation of Nature, or IUCN, is an organization working to protect wild animals and their environment. It claims that pangolins represent as much as 20% of all illegal wildlife trade. The IUCN reports that more than 1 million pangolins were illegally hunted in the 10 years leading up to 2014. Environmental activists and non-governmental organizations have worked hard to learn all they can about pangolins. An IUCN Species Survival Commission formed a pangolin specialist group in 2012. 100 experts from 25 countries are a part of the group. Commission members organized a Pangolin Awareness Day each year in February, starting in 2014. It is called World Pangolin Day.
Pangolins can be found in parts of Asia, including China, India, Indonesia, Myanmar, Thailand, and Vietnam. In Africa, Uganda appears to be a leading supplier of pangolins. Radio Free Asia reports the pangolin trade is highly profitable. Traders can purchase the animals at low prices in Uganda, for example, and then sell them at high prices in Asia. Experts say that most of the illegally bought and sold pangolins are shipped either to China or to Vietnam. In both countries, the animal's scales are said to be prized for medicinal value. At least one media report noted that some people have worn pangolin scales like jewelry.
In addition, pangolin meat is considered a rare, very costly food. In Vietnam, some restaurants serve the meat as their most costly meal. In 2016, an international agency governing wildlife trading worldwide banned illegal hunting, trafficking, and sale of pangolins. All 182 member nations of the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species voted to support the ban. China's government has been increasing its efforts to fight the pangolin trade. And on January 1st, Vietnam amended its laws to increase prison sentences for illegal wildlife sales. The longest sentence is now 15 years, up from 7 years. But when it comes to the illegal trade of pangolins and rhinoceros horns, Vietnam has been slow to act on its promises. The same has been true of its willingness to enforce the strongest sentences.
In 2014, CNN Television reported that Vietnam had only a limited ability to deal with rescued pangolins. Activists working to halt the trade and care for captured pangolins had little support, the report said. Hong Kong has also been slow in enacting punishment. There is no scientific evidence to support the belief that pangolin scales have medical uses. Still, many citizens in Hong Kong apparently believe they do. Pangolins' thick protective scales are made from keratin, the same material that makes up human fingernails. Users heat the animal's skin in water to remove the scales, then dry and cook them. On March 22nd, the French news agency Agence France-Presse reported that some Hong Kong businesses were still involved in the trade. They were selling pangolin scales, sometimes hidden behind boxes containing other goods.
One salesman selling the scales for $108 for only 40 grams claimed that the scales could remove toxic substances. The scales can cost more than $3,000 for just 1 kilogram. The illegal trade in pangolins is reported to be widespread in Indonesia. Between 2007 and 2015, Indonesian officials seized 31,000 pangolins. Separately, in Malaysia, Thailand, and Uganda, some 21,000 pangolins were reported to have been collected during the same period.
Indonesia has declared bans on the hunting and trading of the endangered animals, while threatening severe punishment for violators. But enforcement is a problem, with a lack of money going to control the trade. Endangered pangolins have gained much less international attention than elephants and rhinoceroses. Some experts say these larger animals possess a kind of special appeal lacking in the smaller anteaters. Pangolins are only active at night, making them difficult to observe in the wild. In captivity, pangolins easily fall victim to disease and depression, so they are rarely to be found with other animals in zoos. An exception can be seen in Taiwan, where they have been treated as stars of the animal world. They are taken to zoos, brought back to good health when injured, and returned to the wild when possible. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. We all need to eat. So meals could be a chance to stop what we're doing and spend time with the people in our lives. But sometimes they are not. It does not matter if a person is married or single, is a parent or not, is working or retired. From time to time, we all eat last-minute meals alone. And of course, eating alone at home or at a restaurant can be a very satisfying experience. However, could eating too many meals alone be bad for our health or affect our future success? Several studies show that it might for some people. A recent study from a team of South Korean researchers suggests that frequently eating alone may lead to poor eating habits and poor food choices. Specifically, the study found that men who ate alone more than twice a week had a greater risk of developing high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and diabetes. For children, eating with their families is not only about preventing bad outcomes, it is also about developing good ones. Several studies have looked at the long-term effects eating with families has on a child. Experts say that these studies do not seem to prove a cause and effect relationship. However, they do suggest a strong correlation or link. In 2014, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development looked at data from nearly three-quarters of the world's countries. Among its findings was the fact that students who shared a main meal with their families were less likely to skip school. Children who eat a main meal with their families are also less likely to abuse drugs and alcohol. That was a finding of a study by the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse at Columbia University in New York. The 2012 CASA report found that family dinners were strongly linked to teen substance use prevention. In the report, titled The Importance of Family Dinners, researchers say that teens who have frequent family dinners are more likely to say their parents know a lot about what's going on in their lives. They also claim that when teens say they feel closer to their parents, they are less likely to use drugs and alcohol. Another study from the University of Montreal found that children who ate with their families experience long-term physical and mental health benefits. These children were physically in better shape and drank fewer sugary soft drinks. These children also seemed to have better social skills and self-reported that they were less aggressive. One of the researchers involved in this study is a professor of psychoeducation at the university. Linda Pagani says that there is a handful of research suggesting a positive link between eating family meals together frequently and child and adolescent health. Pagani says that mealtimes shared with parents likely provide young children with firsthand social interaction, discussions of social issues, and day-to-day concerns. She adds that they may likely help the child have better communication skills with others. If you find too many of your mealtimes to be lonely events, experts at the Mental Health Foundation in the UK suggest making small changes. Its website says to make room for at least one shared meal a week. And keep it simple. Even if dinner is a salad and a sandwich, it is still time for a family to be together. If mornings are less busy than evenings, start by making breakfast your shared meal. If you live alone, reach out to those in your social circle or neighborhood. Once a month, potluck dinners, where everyone brings a dish, could be an easy way to start. If you work in an office, step out with a coworker for a bite to eat every once in a while. instead of eating at your desk every day. Or you could simply schedule time in your week to share a cup of coffee or tea with a friend. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Larry West and Tony Riggs continue the story of President Woodrow Wilson.
In 1917, Europe was at war. It was the conflict known as World War I. After 3 years of fighting, Europe's lands were filled with the sights and sounds of death. But still, the armies of the Allies and the Central Powers continued to fight. The United States had tried to keep out of the European conflict. It declared its neutrality. In the end, however, neutrality was impossible. Germany was facing starvation because of a British naval blockade. To break the blockade, German submarines attacked any ship that sailed to Europe. That included ships from neutral nations, like the United States. The German submarines sank several American ships. Many innocent people were killed.
German submarine attacks finally forced the United States into the war. It joined the Allies, Britain, France, and Russia. Like most Americans, President Wilson did not want war, but he had no choice. Sadly, he asked Congress for a declaration of war. Congress approved the declaration on April 6, 1917. It was not long before American soldiers reached the European continent. They marched in a parade through the streets of Paris. The people of France gave them a wild welcome. They cheered the young Americans. They threw flowers at the soldiers and kissed them.
The Americans marched to the burial place of the Marquis de Lafayette. Lafayette was the French military leader who had come to America's aid during its war of independence from Britain. The United States wanted to repay France for its help more than 100 years earlier. An American army officer made a speech at the tomb. He said, "Lafayette, we are here."
And so the Americans were there. They were ready to fight in the bloodiest war the world had ever known. Week by week, more American troops arrived. By October 1917, the American army in Europe totaled 100,000 men. The leader of that army was General John J. Pershing. Pershing's forces were not sent directly into battle. Instead, they spent time training, building bases, and preparing supplies. Then, a small group was sent to the border between Switzerland and Germany. The Americans fought a short but bitter battle there against German forces. The Germans knew the American soldiers had not fought before. They tried to frighten the Americans by waving their knives and guns in a fierce attack. The Americans surprised the Germans. They stood and fought back successfully.
Full American participation in the fighting did not come for several months. It came only after another event took place. That event changed the war and the history of the 20th century. It was the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. Its leader was Vladimir Lenin. The Russian Revolution began in the spring of 1917. The people of that country were tired of fighting Germany, and they were tired of their ruler, Tsar Nicholas. The Tsar was overthrown. A temporary government was established. It was headed by Alexander Kerensky. President Woodrow Wilson sent a team of American officials to Russia to help Kerensky's new government. The officials urged Russia to remain in the war.
Under Kerensky, Russia did keep fighting, but it continued to suffer terrible losses. Many Russians demanded an end to the war. Lenin saw this opposition as a way to gain control of the government. So he went to the city of Petrograd. There, he led the opposition to the war and to Kerensky. Night after night, he spoke to big crowds. "What do you get from war?" he shouted. "Only wounds, hunger, and death." Lenin promised peace under Bolshevik communism. Within a few months, he won control of the Petrograd Soviet. That was an organization of workers and soldiers.
Kerensky's government continued to do badly in the war. More and more Russian soldiers lost hope. Many fled the army. Others stayed, but they refused to fight. The end came in November 1917. Soldiers in Petrograd turned against Kerensky. Lenin ordered them to rebel, and he took control of the government within 48 hours. Russia was now a communist nation. As promised, Lenin called for peace. So Russia signed its own peace treaty with Germany. The treaty forced Russia to pay a high price for its part in the war. It had to give up a third of its farmland, half of its industry, and 90% of its coal mines. It also lost a third of its population. Still, it did not have real peace with Germany.
The treaty between Russia and Germany had a powerful influence on the military situation in the rest of Europe. Now, Germany no longer had to fight an enemy on two fronts. Its eastern border was quiet suddenly. It could aim all its forces against Britain, France, and the other Allies on its western border. Germany had suffered terrible losses during 4 years of war. Many of its soldiers had been killed. And many of its civilians had come close to starving because of the British naval blockade. Yet, Germany's leaders still hoped to win. They decided to launch a major attack. They knew they had to act quickly before the United States could send more troops to help the Allies.
German military leaders decided to break through the long battle line that divided most of Central Europe. They planned to strike first at the north end of the line. British troops held that area. The Germans would push the British off the continent and back across the English Channel. Then they would turn all their strength on France. When France was defeated, Germany would be victorious. The campaign opened in March 1918. German forces attacked British soldiers near Amiens, France. The Germans had 6,000 pieces of artillery. The British troops fought hard, but could not stop the Germans. They were pushed back 50 kilometers. The attack stopped for about a week.
Then the Germans struck again. This time, their target was Ypres, Belgium. The second attack was so successful, it seemed the Germans might push the British all the way back to the sea. The British commander, Field Marshal Douglas Haig, ordered his men not to withdraw. Haig said, "There is no other course open to us but to fight it out." The British fought hard and stopped the attack. Losses on both sides were extremely high. Yet the Germans continued with their plan.
Their next attack was northeast of Paris in May. This time they broke the Allied line easily and rushed toward Paris. The German army chief, General Erich Ludendorff, tried to capture the French capital without waiting to strengthen his forces. He got close enough to shell the city. The French government prepared to flee. Allied military leaders rushed more troops to the area. The new force included 2 big groups of American Marines.
The heaviest fighting was outside Paris at a place called Belleau Wood. The American Marines were advised to prepare for a possible withdrawal. One Marine said, "Withdrawal? We just got here." The Marines resisted as the Germans attacked Allied lines in Belleau Wood again and again. Then they attacked the German lines. The battle for Belleau Wood lasted 3 weeks. It was the most serious German offensive of the war. The Germans lost.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.